The Art and Architecture series at the 1891 Fredonia Opera House features visually rich documentaries about major art exhibits across the world. The next presentation in the series is entitled The Danish Collector, Delacroix to Gauguin, and features impressionist masterpieces from the collection of Danish businessman Wilhelm Hansen at Ordrupgaard, his summer home. With me to talk about this collection and the impressionist era of art is SUNY Distinguished Professor of Art, Alberto Rey. Well, it's great to welcome back Distinguished Professor of Art, Alberto Rey. Alberto, welcome once again. Good to have you back.
Great to be back. This is a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to talking a little bit about Impressionism.
Yes, indeed. Impressionism, we're getting masterpieces from the Ordrupgaard, I believe. I probably haven't pronounced that right, collection, but it's an interesting backstory on that collection. And I think that this particular series coming out at the Opera House is going to be pretty fascinating to anybody who likes Impressionism. My wife is a big Impressionist fan, and I know a lot of people are probably at least passingly familiar with the Impressionist movement, but, you know, so that we can get some audience prepared for going to see this particular documentary, can you just give us some idea of how this Impressionist movement all came about, like what led up to it?
Well, yeah, you know, nothing happens in a vacuum. So one of the things that was kind of interesting up to this point was one of the major developments that led up to it was the invention of the tubes of paint, something you never would have thought of, but it was originally invented in 1840 by a man called Paul Rand, who actually used to put the paint in syringes, glass syringes, and then he was able to work outside plein air painting. And then after that, William Windsor, the name on Windsor Newton paints, came up with the metal tube with the screw top. Now that allowed painters to actually go outside and paint. And even Monet said that, Renoir said that there wouldn't be any Impressionist movement if it wasn't for the tube of paint. Because all the artists had to make up their own paint, and so consequently they were tied to their studios, but this allowed them to go outside. And that also kind of enabled the Barbizon School to get started. The Barbizon School was a kind of predecessor of the Impressionists, which was less classical, more real life interpretation of art, which was also what the realism school happened at the same time as the Barbizon school. Barbizon was mostly pushing to go outside to plein air. Realism was everyday life. What is important? What is beautiful about everyday life? It was kind of stepping away from the classical, from the rich, from the elitist. And this was, you know, bringing it down to, you know, everyday people and making that part of life important in art. And after that, because this was such a revolutionary concept, and it led, you know, as part of a much larger thing that was happening socially, a lot of social change was happening. One of the things that was also led up to the Impressionism was a whole new way of looking at light, the physics of light. You know, one of the things that happens when you paint is painting is a subtractive process. And what that means is when you mix paint together, it's less bright. So the more pigments you add to each other, the muddier it gets. Light, if you mix light together, like colored light, like in a theater production, the more light you put in, it's an additive process. So the more light, the brighter it is. And instead of getting more color, you get less color because it becomes brighter and brighter and brighter. And again, paint is subtractive. So one of the things that they realized was they could make paintings brighter, more intense, more saturated by putting colors of paint next to each other. Instead of blending them, they could put them next to each other. And then as you move back, the paint, that color would blend together because of distance. And that way you could use intense color and you wouldn't be losing any of the saturation, any of the hues that the painting had. And so what it led to was the idea that there, you're interpreting life, light, color in a whole new way. And it was more about how you felt about the environment than photographically interpreting what it was you saw. And this was really controversial. I mean, the public was fairly hostile about this idea. Monet, the guy that we, you know, think we all, you know, he must have been really loved. He wasn't. I mean, even in France, nobody cared about his work. Nobody liked his work. It was the Americans who first started collecting his work. And they would come over and buy just multiple pieces to take back. And it wasn't until much later that the French government and the French public that started to appreciate his work. So it's pretty interesting.
Well, I think that guy that this documentary is about, his collection, Wilhelm Hansen, actually got all of these paintings for very little money,
yeah,
simply because Impressionism in his era was not appreciated.
Right, right. Yeah. And that you know, if you want to read a great book, it's called The Mad Enchantment by Ross King. I just listened to it a few months ago. I like to listen to actually the history of art history while I'm painting. I find it like I'm connecting to these artists. It's kind of fun. But anyhow, it talks about Claude Monet and what a character he was, and that he had a couple people that really supported him in France that kept him painting even during the war. And that, but the government, you know, they weren't willing to support a lot of, he wanted his own museum that he got much, much later. But they weren't willing to pay for what he wanted or make a museum the way he wanted. He wanted a round museum to hold his water lilies. And they just weren't willing to pay that amount of money at the time. It took much later. Now it's much more, it's a beautiful space. But he also went blind towards the end, and it was talks about, you know, the surgery that they used to do back then and the glasses to correct the surgery. It's a fascinating story.
It sounds like an interesting listen for sure. What was it like to be in Paris at that particular time, the 19th century? It seems to be a very fertile era for painting, particularly in Paris.
Right. Yeah, I think there's a lot of, one of the things that I think a lot of people think is that things start and end. So one of the things, if you look at Sargent, who's a famous American painter, if you look at his paintings, they look super realistic, but when you come up close, it's just broken down brushwork, very loose brushwork. So the idea of going from something like that to Impressionism isn't a big jump. So it's just a stylistic interpretation that more people thought that this would be interesting. And even after Impressionism, you know, what we think ended, it never ends. I mean, it's still going on today. So, you know, other things just become more popular or more important. But these kind of streams of consciousness in painting continue. It's just, you know, other things kind of filter in and get more attention, but things don't necessarily stop. They just become less, they get less attention, less notable. But I think during that time, he had a lot of different artists, a lot of different things happening. Paris was the center of the art world. And you know, New York was coming shortly after that, but there was a lot happening back then, you had, Degas, Renoir, Pissarro, Manet. Sargent would come over and paint with Manet. We don't necessarily think of Sargent as an impressionist painting, but painter, but he would paint outside with Manet. And so I think this was, it was a lot happening in society, a lot of questioning happening. This is post Industrial Revolution. So a lot of, there was a lot of money moving around, a lot of support. A lot of it was fairly traditional, but there was a lot of interest in looking at things differently socially as well.
Well, as a non-artist myself, it's one of the things I really like about Impressionism when I see it is just that the sense of, a lightness in the brush strokes and the vibrancy of the color. And I think that something about that kind of lets me think that, coming from that Industrial Revolution and moving into this new era, the keynote seems to be expressing so much more freedom in the work that you can do. I just think that the Impressionists seem to be that point where, people were breaking away from very rigid conventions and getting a little bit more free with their brushstrokes, with their use of color, and all of that kind of stuff.
Right, absolutely. I think that every artist, we sometimes think of Impressionism as the idea of Pissarro or Monet, these kind of soft paintings. But I mean, there's a lot of different artists with a lot of different styles that were classified under Impressionism. Again, like Gauguin, if you look at Gauguin compared to Pissarro, a completely different style, but it's just a different way of interpreting your environment, taking risks. If you look at a lot of Manet's work, I think one of the pieces that I think is going to be in the series is this landscape, and it looks very, very unfinished. And to do something like that at that period in art history was just scandalous. The idea that you would just put, a couple squiggles of paint in one area for the sun or the moon, and another squiggles for a reflection, and everything else would be washed out, kind of brushed loose paint, would had to be just shocking. I mean, people would just, I'm sure, would say, well, this person's not doing any, this is just trash. But, we see it now as wonderful, but it's because we've seen a ton of it. We've seen decades and centuries of interpretation. And so it's very kind of commonplace for us. But if we were to see what was happening back then, like super realistic work that was, super tight, and then you have something like this, you would think, well, this person either doesn't know how to paint, or is taking an easy way out, or is trying to pull something over on the public, and that's kind of what everybody thought. It was only a small group of supporters who saw the potential, how this was different, that this interpretation was different than anything that had happened in the past.
Yeah, I do find impressionistic painters very exciting. I remember, I think it was in a Monet exhibit that I went to up at the Albright Knox one year, and it was just, I remember being stunned for the, first time seeing a lot of Monet's work, late work, I think, live. But it's really amazing to see it live. But I think this HD documentary is going to be great too. I did manage to find a trailer, and it looks quite interesting. Do you have a favorite amongst all these various painters?
One guy that I came across, I've seen his work before, but I saw a series of his work at the museum at Yale, is Whistler. And I hadn't really paid much attention to him in the past. I've seen his work, but they have this series of night paintings that are super subtle, just incredibly beautiful. There's not much to them, but there's a beautiful emotion. And again, the guts to do something like this at that period was just astounding. And again, some of Monet, of course, Monet's work, and you know, again, Sargent. I mean, all those people I enjoy. But there's something about those pieces by Whistler that I just find really compelling. And again, Water Lilies by Monet, you know, that you can see those in New York. But one of the things that's kind of interesting also is what happened after Impressionism. You know, it doesn't get a lot of attention, but there's the Fauvist movement. And that is like Impressionism on steroids. Huh. It is just super colorful, super intense, just really out there. And it does, a lot of people doesn't get a lot of attention, but I think it's even more exciting because it's just so how far they pushed the Impressionist idea to just use really exciting combinations and interpretations of color.
Yeah, it's always like, you know, there's always, you establish a movement and usually towards the end, there's always a collection of people who are trying to push that to the max, the absolute max, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes that produces the most exciting work. You got anything going on?
Me? Yeah, I got a show coming up at SUNY Oswego in March with a new book that's coming out on the Oswego River. And then I have an exhibition in February at SUNY Adirondack in Queensbury, down by Lake George. Mm-hmm. I'm showing my extinct birds and my iceberg paintings.
Oh, good.
And then I got two big museum shows next year that I'm a little freaked out about. One is on the Niagara River for the Castellani Museum in March. And the other one is on the Battenkill River for the Southern Vermont Arts Center, also in March. So I got two big solo museum shows happening at the same time. So I got to do at least 20 new 6-foot paintings by then.
20 new 6-foot paintings in 1 year.
Yeah.
You're going to be a busy man, Alberto.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm stressing out already. I got to do a lot of research before that. So that's kind of what I'm doing. I'm reading a lot of books. I'm reading the history of Niagara Falls. I'm reading, also listening to a new book on, just came out actually, the American History of Cuba. Completely unrelated, but I just find it fascinating. There's a lot to do.
Yeah, good. All right. Well, listen, thanks a lot for your time, Alberto. I'm going to let you go. And I know we'll be doing this again sometime because it's a great time for both of us.
All right. Great. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks. Bye-bye. You too, Alberto. Bye-bye.